High FM, 101.9 megahertz of life. You're listening to the SN Fresen Show on 101.9 High FM.
Hi, good morning and welcome. I'm Adrian Bugatti and you are listening to the SN Fresen Show on High FM 101.9, where it's all about the food. So coming up in today's show is some exciting stuff and a slightly little change to our format of the way it's going to be presented. So first I'm going to start talking about two different spices and how we can use them and what flavors they take on. And then we're going to look at some cooking terms to help clarify the difference between frying and sautéing. Another thing that we're going to look at today is how to read your food labels and what do all the ingredients mean. So I've chosen one ingredient for today and I will discuss that after my interview. And then very exciting, I have an interview coming up with Melissa Mayo. She is an ex-South African living in California, a food network chef. She is an author, a speaker, and she runs tours in Italy for cooking. We also have a bit of a kosher update, even though most people will have it. The last update we found was from November. So if you've got any questions, any suggestions, please message us either on Telegram 061-895-1019, SMS on 34519. SMSs are charged at R1.50, or you can send us an email on onair@highfm.com. You're listening to the SN Fresen Show with Adrian Bugatti. So the first thing I'm going to talk about are two spices. So the first spice is one that very few of us know how to use properly, and that's called allspice. And allspice is actually not a whole lot of spices, as the word would say. Allspice is a single spice. It is a berry grown. Normally when it's dried, we see it brown. It's grown. It's a tropical tree. And it's a relative of the clove, which is why it has that slightly spiced flavor to it. It's native to the West Indies and Central America, and that's where you will find it most commonly. So where did it come from? Well, in the 17th century, when the allspice berries were first imported to Europe, it was said to taste of a combination of cloves, cinnamon, and nutmeg. So it's great in a winter drink, like a spiced wine or something. The allspice berries are harvested when they are still unripe. So they're green when they are harvested, and then they briefly fermented. Then they put out nowadays in machines to dry, but originally they were just sun-dried. And those turned them a reddish-brown in color as the process took place. Your allspice, to add it to food, you need to be careful which food you're going to add it to. It is quite a strong spice. It's got a very nice warm taste to it. And it's an aromatic compound. So it gives you this, it's got quite a strong smell to it when you use it. And it does smell very similar to cloves. So you need to be careful when you open your bottle, which one's which. So it contains something called cineol, which is a fresh, sharp smell. And then I'm going to mess this one up. Carophyllene, which is a woody smell. And although it's often compared to cinnamon, allspice doesn't actually contain that same strength as cinnamon. Okay, we're going to take a bit of an ad break now. And when we get back, you're listening to Adrian Bugatti on the SN Fresen Show on High FM 101.9.
High FM, your station of choice since 2008. You're listening to the SN Fresen Show on 101.9 High FM.
Good morning. You're listening to High FM 101.9. I'm Adrian Bugatti, and this is the SN Fresen Show, where it's all about the food. Please send us any messages on Telegram 061-895-1019, or send us an SMS 34519. And that is charged at R1.50, or you can email us onair@highfm.com with any comments, suggestions, or questions. So originally I was talking about allspice and what its flavor is. And we said it's a combination flavor of cloves, cinnamon, and nutmeg, even though it is a single spice. So are there any health benefits to this allspice? Well, there are quite a few. The problem is that when we cook most spices, we don't use the quantity needed to give us a proper health benefit. But it doesn't mean that you don't put it in your food. So the quantity isn't enough, as we said, to be nutritionally significant. But where it is very useful is in essential oils and in medicinal concentrations. It does have antimicrobial factors. It's got anti-inflammatory properties, and it's great for colds, menstrual cramps, and upset stomach. So if you're going to put some allspice into a carrier-based oil to use for some aromatherapy, that would be wonderful, or even to just burn as an aromatherapy candle. So that is allspice. Used sparingly, great flavors to stews and curries. My second one is one that I actually don't know about and only just learned while researching for the show. And that's something called angelica. Most of us don't know angelica, but a lot of us have actually had it. So here's why. Angelica is actually part of the carrot family, even though it doesn't look anything like a carrot. But it also includes the flavor of anise, celery, cumin, fennel, and dill. And any of the other plants that you find or herbs that you find that have got those feathery leaves, that is part of the angelica family. Now, angelica tastes more like carrot than the spicier anise or fennel or dill, so that almost licorice type flavoring. It's found mostly in Finland, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Greenland, and Iceland, and it is commercially cultivated in Belgium, Germany, France, and quite a few other European countries. Now, the white flower from angelica is used for some stuff that most of us quite enjoy, and that's an ingredient in alcoholic beverages. So, for those who know absinthe, the green drink that was banned for a very long time, angelica is one of their main ingredients. The other ones are chartreuse, Benedictine, gin, and vermouth. Once it's distilled, angelica has quite an earthy flavor, and it can be a little bit bitter and also sort of minty, like a herbal flavor to it. And it's got a smell like a nettle. So it's a bit of a sting to the smell, which gives the, if you smell gin or vermouth, it's got that sharp flavor. It can sometimes be mistaken for juniper berries, which we will discuss on another day. And they are not the same. Angelica does, by the way, have health benefits as well. It's used for heartburn, for winds, for loss of appetite. It can help with arthritis, with circulatory problems, with runny nose, with nervousness, and believe it or not, was used to treat the Black Plague, the one that was caused by rats. So keep it around in case. And it's also good for insomnia. Once again, if you've got any questions relating to food, cooking, anything like that, please give us a message us or give us an email, telegram 061-895-1019 or SMS 34519. SMSs are charged at 1.50 rand, or you can drop an email on air at chaifm.com. So my terminology today for cooking. So what is the difference between sautéing and frying? They both happen in a frying pan. So what is your difference? Well, frying is when you use oil to actually cook the ingredient. So you use a fair amount of butter or oil, and that is your frying. And deep frying, obviously, the product, whatever you're cooking is immersed in quite a lot of oil. And shallow frying is where you just put enough to coat the bottom of the pan. And remember, when you are frying, it's very important with when you're using olive oil to heat your pan first and then add the olive oil to the cooking pan, because olive oil burns at a lower temperature than ordinary cooking oil, so you don't want it to get too hot. It changes the flavor. Sauteing means you're cooking directly from the heat of the pan. Oil, usually flavored olive oils or butter, are added to the pan only to flavor the food and to stop it from sticking to the pan. So when you're sauteing stuff, it's very little, usually about a teaspoon as opposed to covering the whole bottom of the pan. Teaspoon, tablespoon at the most, and it's just for flavoring. So that is the difference between sauteing and cooking. And then our ingredient for today. So if you look on certain labels, you will find an ingredient called tocopherol. Now, that is an antioxidant. So what is an antioxidant? An antioxidant helps us fight off the toxins in the air almost. Tocopherol is actually a type of vitamin E antioxidant, and it helps to protect the cells from the damaging effects that free radicals have. And free radicals are the ones that help with the development of cardiovascular disease and cancer. So even though sometimes you'll find on your food label some absolutely unpronounceable ingredients, not all of them are bad. So the old saying of, if you can't say it, it's not good for you, is not really true. Okay, so ensure complete peace of mind this holiday season by entrusting your valuables with Knox Safe Custody and Art Storage, conveniently located in Houghton. Call Knox today on 011-646-1919 and receive a complimentary Chai FM listeners discount. That number again, 011-646-1919. So we're going to take a bit of an ad break now. You're listening to Essen Fresen's show on Chai FM 101.9.
Chai FM 101.9 megahertz of life.
Something more this time. love it here to last. This year's love it here to last.
Listening to the SN Fresen Show on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Adrian Bogarty. This is the SN Fresen Show on High FM 101.9. And on air today, I have Melissa Mayo, my guest. I'm so excited to speak to her. Melissa, welcome.
Adrian, thank you so much for having me on the show. Excited as you are.
You know what? It's been great. I was so excited when I saw your message to say you're coming to South Africa. I thought, right, that's it. I have to phone. I have to get hold of you and get you on my show. I've been following you for a while, and just love the recipes and everything. So thank you for doing this with us today. So let's
are you kidding? Do you have feedback online? Is there terrible feedback?
There is a bit of feedback, but not to worry. We'll keep trying. There is some feedback coming, but I can hear you for the most part.
Okay. So what I was saying is that South Africa to my core. I'm born and raised. It flows through my blood. I couldn't think of anything better than being on a show with a fellow South African in my home country. This is Africa. This is me.
This is it.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, no. Believe me, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. So what got you interested in cooking? Like, how old were you when you started cooking?
I was a kid at my mom's knee, basically. That's the real truth. And I would always ask her, she'd call me and she'd say, taste this. Does it need salt? Does it need sugar? Does it need vinegar? And I was always helping her, and our home was always full around the chagim. And everything was always around, the kitchen and the home and having people over. And the real truth is I wasn't a fabulous cook, but I'd helped her as a sous chef. And when I moved to the States, I said, Mom, teach me to cook. Like, I don't know how to cook anything, and I miss all the flavors. And I would say, send me a recipe. She said, but I don't have recipes. You know, taste. Is it ready? Is it boiled? Is it brown? Is it soupy? And she would sit on the phone and rack up a huge phone bill and talk me through things, but there were never measurements. Like, a recipe from her just had ingredients. And so I became more of an intuitive cook. And over the years, that's what I've kind of been guided by, what's seasonal, what's available. And I don't love the idea of necessarily following a recipe. I think it takes out the joy and the creativity behind cooking. So I'm much more of an intuitive chef. I've always been told by my mom, follow your taste buds, and the dish will tell you if it needs more salt or if it needs to cook longer or if it's, you know, it's done. And so I use visual cues and my taste as a guide. And my cooking is obviously a lot more bold and spice forward than in their days, and a lot less cream based. But definitely my love of cooking started at my mom's knee. Definitely. She was a phenomenal cook. And last night we were actually, out for dinner with my nephew, and I said, so is Auntie Mel the best chef in the world? And he goes, no, Gug is the best chef. So,
well,
my mom is still the best chef, definitely, hands down, the best chef. I would give anything to eat one more of her meals.
Yeah, definitely. That is a hard thing to get used to. I know I do that to my son. I must admit, I'll yell down the passage, please come taste this. So he's an intuitive.
You know, that's where you develop it.
Yeah. He's definitely an intuitive, not that he enjoys cooking unless it's meat, but, he definitely, he can taste stuff and go.
And after my heart.
Yeah. Yeah. Try to introduce veganism in my house and we'll see what happens. So that's the main thing.
Full on revolt, so don't worry. Full on revolt.
Yeah, that's it. So I know
you never know how many people you're having, you know. Sometimes it's just you three or four people for dinner, and sometimes you have 90 people for breaking of a fast, and no recipe is going to tell you how to cook for 90. No recipe is going to tell you how much salt you need or herbs for that. So if you don't taste, you're never going to get there. You're never going to get to the mark.
That probably explains why I can't make a filter fish, because the thought of tasting it before I put it in the pot to boil is beyond me. So I leave that to one of my daughters.
Funny story, because my mom used to make gefilte fish from scratch. Mm. And this is a crazy story. She comes to South LA to visit, and she wants to make it, and she's looking for schmaltz for it, liver and schmaltz for that. And she's walking around the supermarket there saying, that man's got a big nose. He must be Jewish. And she'd go up to him and say, why there's no schmaltz in stores? And don't think we didn't make schmaltz and gefilte fish from scratch. So yes. I know exactly what you're talking about. All the gelatin and the fish bones. I must be honest, I have not made gefilte fish my way my mom did.
No.
I have not.
So that is something. But you wouldn't make gefilte fish, because your cooking is more like Sephardi influenced. You've got more of the Italian side to you in your cooking.
My cooking is actually just more a Mediterranean and flavor influence.
Yes.
You know, whereas in the old days, and don't get me wrong, I mean, Myrna Rosen was my mom's Bible,
yeah.
And my mom made delicious food, and she learned with Margaret Mayeroff and all of the best, but they used a lot of butter and sugar and French, and everything started with a bechamel sauce.
Yes.
I think if you use quality ingredients and you don't do too much to them, you will end up with an amazing dish. So I'm not really a Greek or an Israeli or a Italian or whatever chef. I'm in finding ingredients that are peak and in their season and sweet and juicy, and then combining flavors and herbs and spices to take the dishes around the world. I must be honest, I'm blind and deaf pretty much, but I can taste very well. So I could go to a country, taste their food, and come back and tell you exactly the spices and the ingredients. Ooh. So I will mix and match things according to my spice rack, and then the chicken is going to go around the world without leaving your kitchen. So I'm very much more of a bold forward spice cook, and as a result, that is where there's no calories that I add to it. I like simple cooking, like grilling and roasting, just because it's healthier and you don't ruin the food with sauces and things like that. I've never owned a crock pot. My husband's like, you can't, you're killing the meat in sauce. So we use the grill and the barbecue a lot. And I remember when I launched my first Pesach cookbook, my mother's like, you can't ask them to use the braai for Pesach. I said, why? It's much easier. I give him the food marinated. He cooks it. He brings it inside. I put it in the oven. It's warm. One more thing for me to cook. I free it up an oven. She's like, but you can't braai for the Jewish holidays. And I still maintain that nothing tastes better than what a food that comes off like a charcoal grill or a gas grill. So yes, I think more than anything, I would say I am a braai babe. I am 100% grill girl. 100%. Love the grill.
So I love the grill as well, as long as someone else is doing it.
That's fine. I marinate it. I make the salads. Yes. I make the veggies. And, you know, the truth of the matter is all my recipes on my website are tested to the minute. Like if it says heat the grill and then turn the grill to medium and it says flip after 5 minutes and then flip, those are times work. So as long as you're using a timer, you are a grill girl and you're chicken won't be dry and your meat will be done. I spend so much time perfecting the timing of my recipes in terms of grill time that they are a science. I promise you, take a alarm clock and you set.
Okay, that sounds perfect. I like that kind of idea. I have made quite a few of your things and they always turn out, so I'm not complaining here. We're going to share one of your recipes just now that I got off your website when I was looking through a nice recipe to find. So when I'm talking to you, I know that main meals and sides are your thing. Your desserts and baking, I mean, baking needs an exact recipe, and if you prefer to like wing it.
Exactly. I don't like finisher. I like fresh fruits. I love fruits. I eat a fortune of it, but I like a fresh fruit and some gelato or, you know, I do like a good carrot cake or things with nuts, but there's a thing about cooking for me that's intuitive. I open the fridge. I see what I have. I kind of throw in and add a dash and a pinch and a smidgen. And, you know, I kind of taste my way there. And baking means I'm opening up a book and I'm measuring and I'm leveling out. And it just screams to my days as an accountant, like, too precise. It just breaks creativity for me. Plus, I'm really not a sweet person. Like, yeah. I would say my drug of choice would be salt and vinegar chips.
Okay.
So I like salty things. So I'm much more of a salt person than a sweet person. That's probably another reason I'm not huge, huge dessert lover.
Yes.
Although in Italy, I'd eat a lot of dessert, I have to say. I eat a lot of ice cream.
So that's, I was actually looking at this, well, Miracles Manifested, the book about, I mean, it was beautiful, the book about how your dream to get this, Susina Kachina going, and just really sound amazing to have a dream like that, to be able to go to Italy and teach cooking in summer. It sounds like an amazing, amazing trip.
I hope the message people take out of the book
yeah.
is that everyone, including my family, friends, everyone thought I was crazy, except for my husband. And I still think deep down he thought I was crazy. But the message in the book is that my dream happened to be a cooking school in Italy.
Yeah.
But if your dream is, you know, your own TV show, or
yeah.
your dream is to retire, and, you know, raise money for whatever it is, the steps in the book actually work applicable to all miracles, because I didn't manifest the house in Italy. I just harnessed the spark of Hashem and I used this divine light of my creator. I believed in him. I dropped out. I ignored the haters. I followed, obviously, the steps in there. I tapped into my own light. I used a roadmap.
Yes.
And the roadmap worked. But the message is that mine was just a house in Italy, but you could be my next door neighbor if you really wanted to, or do anything else that you know have. There's a story in the book that actually speaks about, I was diagnosed with almost a paralyzed right lame arm.
Mm.
And I know a friend of mine now is going through a lot of back pain and trouble. And the power of the mind can even heal the body from things like cancer and illness and paralysis and things like that. Our mind is so powerful if we communicate with our source and we tell our source what we want and we stay focused on that mission. So our hope is that, yes, I got the cooking school in Italy, but that anyone that reads it obviously has their own miracles and they use the tools to manifest them.
Yes, yeah. I think that that's absolutely, you know, they often say mind over matter, and there is. It's a really sort of, if you focus on what your dreams are, you know, it is possible. Nobody said it was going to be easy.
Just with water that they did, with the words that you speak to different water crystals, and some of them turn into toxic polluted water, and some water heals and forms beautiful crystals, and they're actually able to change toxic water. So your words, your thoughts, all of it has power. It's energy. You know, there is like no new energy. So it's when we use these powerful words, these I am words of God, and say, I'm unlucky, I'm overweight, I'll never catch a break. We're literally putting out into the universe the things we want to bring back to us. We should never ever think or speak anything we don't want to attract. And I catch myself so often mid-sentence and I'm like, you can say that differently, you can change your words, you can change, and you do, you literally, by changing your words and your thoughts, can change your entire reality and the way it unfolds.
That's...
And I know now it's a dark time, and you know, people are saying, but it's been a tough year, but it's been a... I am going to have a great year this new year. My business is going to flourish. I am going to be healthy. I'm going to be sober. I'm going to be in love. I'm going to meet my soulmate. By putting that energy into the universe, you become a magnet for the things that you put in there. And all the time that I was manifesting this house in Italy, oh my word, there were so many doubters. My mom was the top of the list, the top. Everyone said it was impossible, but as long as you keep your pictures private and your messages and conversations private and you have them with your creator, anything you paint in your mind, in your imagination, is your own. And somebody actually said to me the other day, well, what about the doubters and what about the negatives and naysayers? And I said, just put a lockbox on it. Just change the conversation and make no apologies for stepping away from people who who make you doubt yourself or bring out the worst in you. Your energy is the only thing that can really control your destiny, and you have to be very protective of who you share it with. Obviously, I don't have any enemies. I don't wish people well, but I can feel if somebody doesn't wish me good, and I make no apologies for stepping away from it because it taints my pictures.
Yeah.
And I come away drained. So yes, it is really all about energy. Manifesting is really all about harnessing this energy that causes our nails to grow, that sets the sun, that, you know, brings a newborn baby into the world. Hashem. Hashem is that energy to tap into. And with him, all things are possible. We are never, as dark as we may be, we are never alone if we walk with him. And I always say that, you know, he is where you let him in. When you open the door and welcome him in, just like guests, you know, we're talking entertaining guests. When you open the door and let him in, he will come in and he will always forgive you. It was like another thing my nephew said to me last night. I said, did you light this Hanukkah candle? And he goes, oh, no, I'm bad. That's naughty. And I said, you know what the nice thing about our God is? He's always waiting, and he always forgives us, and we don't have any hell to go to. He's always there to forgive you, and he's always ready for you to do that one more mitzvah when you do it. Yeah. Don't worry about the candles. He's not worried either. And that's the truth, and that's my message. We may have made many mistakes. We may have got it wrong, but today's a new day, and as long as we try to be better today than we were yesterday and help the people that we can on our path, we're doing his work. We're soldiers in his army, and all the things that we're trying so hard to come will come to us without the effort.
That's an amazing message. Amazing message. So I'm manifesting now. Sorry.
Yes.
You were saying?
It's in the surrendering and the trusting in him. And you're manifesting now.
To be able to one day join you in your kitchen in Italy for a cooking lesson. That's the main thing.
There was no maybe and one day. I'm manifesting coming to Italy to cook with you. It has to be definitive. There's no maybes and one day. It's done.
Sounds good.
You have to see yourself there with the spritz and the pasta dough covered in flour on a yacht. You have to see it. And another thing that is so critical is seeing it from the finish line. I always say, when I pictured the house, I didn't picture the house as a 47-year-old. I pictured the house as a nonna. I was gray-haired. And my daughter, who's not even married, never been kissed, was married with grandchildren. And I was a nonna making challah with my grandchildren. So when you see it and you paint those pictures in explicit detail, like you have to already see what you're wearing there, and you know, the pictures that you're going to take, the ticket booked, you have to put a date down. You have to make firm commitments to it. No maybes, no what ifs, no possibles, no could be, should be, definitive, done deal. It's sealed. I always say that to people, I was like, it's done. You have to see it as done. It's so critical to see it from the finish line as already happened. You've run the race. You've dripped with sweat. You've put in the hard work. You're now at the finish line, and that's it. So, you know, the next time you and I meet in the new year, we'll be toasting with Aperol spritzes in Italy. It's done.
Please God. Yes, definitely. Definitely sounds great. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It was an absolute privilege to speak to you. And enjoy the rest of your stay here. In South Africa.
Thank you so much.
So you're listening.
And can I let people know that if you would love to come and say hi on Wednesday, this Wednesday at 3, I'm going to be at the Fishmonger saying hi.
In Illovo, yes.
On Sunday in Illovo, Fishmonger in Illovo, and on Sunday at 10 o'clock at the Frangelica's in Glen Hazel.
Yes.
So if anyone's around and you want to come say hi and have a cup of coffee, I would love to meet anyone who would like to just put a face to these amazing names and this community that we have that's so strong. And thank you for having me on my show. And next time in Italy, right?
Please God, absolutely. But I will see you at Frangelica's. So yes, because I have to say hello properly. And thank you. This is Adrian Bugatti. You're listening to Chai FM 101.9, the Essen Fresen Show.
Chai FM 101.9 megahertz of life.
Hi, welcome back. You're listening to Adrian Bugatti. This is the Essen Fresen Show on Chai FM 101.9. So if you've got any suggestions for the show, if you've got any questions around cooking, or any comments at all, please send us a telegram on 061 895 1019 or SMS us on 34519. SMSs are charged at R1.50 or drop us an email on onair@highfm.com. So, like I said, I wanted to start doing as part of the show is just to update the community on what's new on the kosher list and what's been taken off the kosher list. So far, as far as we could find, only the last update was on the 25th of November, and there were two messages. The first one was Lifestyle Foods soy milk powder has been erroneously marked kosher. It is, in fact, not kosher. And then True Earth Corn Puffed Maize Snack is dairy and not pyrov as marked. So those are the two updates that I have for you for the moment. And to share a recipe from my beautiful guest, Melissa Mayo, her Greek lamb and with lemon potatoes. So I have converted it so that it works for South Africa. So it's 1.8 kilos of boneless leg of lamb or shoulder, because we can't get leg of lamb kosher here in South Africa. 4 cloves of garlic. Then a handful each of thyme, rosemary, and oregano. 2 lemons. Keep the zest for the marinade, and the juice is for squeezing over the meat and potatoes. And I'm already drooling. 1/2 cup of extra virgin olive oil. Coarse salt. Freshly ground pepper. And 1.2 kilos of potatoes peeled. So to make it, your method is to chop the garlic, rosemary, thyme, oregano, and combine them with the zest from the lemons. And then you season your lamb with salt and pepper. Place in a large Ziploc bag. I love Ziploc bags in my kitchen. And add the herb and garlic mixture. You seal the bag and you marinate it overnight. Bring the lamb back to room temperature. Remember, never cook your meat straight from the fridge. It should be room temperature, otherwise it shrinks too much. Tie it with a string so it forms a beautiful roast and place it in a large roasting pan. Peel your potatoes and quarter them. Toss them with some olive oil, salt and pepper, and put them around the lamb. Squeeze the two lemons over the meat and potatoes and drizzle with some olive oil. And in your preheated oven at 180, you're going to cook your meat. Now, the cooking time, Melissa says she's got it down to a minute. So cooking time is 1 to 1.5 hours on the bottom rack of your oven, uncovered. And you want the meat to go nice and golden crispy. You take the lamb out. You create a tent with some tinfoil. And you let it rest for about 15 to 20 minutes. Now, the cooking time depends on the size of your roast and how you like it done, whether you like it rare, medium rare, or well done. That also depends. So if you like it well done, then you are going to put it in, so you work it out. It's 25 minutes per 1/2 kilo for medium rare, and the if you've got a thermometer, which I love, I do use it quite a lot. It's 63 to 68 degrees Celsius when it's just done. So for medium rare is 63, for medium 71, and for well done 77 degrees Celsius for internal temperature. Now, if you've discovered that your potatoes haven't browned enough or you want them slightly more crispy, increase the temperature of your oven to about 230, 240 and continue the cooking while your meat is roasting. Then you can serve and enjoy a delicious Greek lamb with lemon potatoes. You can find this recipe on Melissa Mayo's website, and we will post it on the Chai FM website as well. Thank you for listening. I'm Adrian Bugatti. This is the Essen Freysen Show on Chai FM 101.9.
Chai FM 101.9 megahertz of life.